an end. There has to be a way of cutting this Gordian knot that has disturbed humanity for thousands of years. You cannot say that the other side of the world will be peaceful if it doesn't want to be. But you can so understand your own relationship to it that you can learn vicariously the great lesson that they must learn in time. You can also make sure that you do not waste the years of your energy on problems that are unsolvable. Straighten out your attitude toward things. See the honest, see the real, see the good, and try your best always to have the courage to follow the dictates of conscience, but not go out and talk about it to everyone you know. The moments you begin to share your convictions, they begin to be diluted, until finally you are talked out of most of them. So starting with that, quiet comes first. Now the next thing that you have to figure out is in the condition that you're in at the moment, just where you are now, what is your principal trial? What is happening to you right now, or what has happened over a long period of time that is weighing heavily upon your conscience at this moment? Why are you troubled? Oh, you can be troubled over a lot of small things, but why are you troubled over something great enough to cause you to worry or to dispositionalize your nature adversely? Well, one will say, I face a broken home. Another may one say, I have a delinquent child. A third may say, I can't pay the rent. All kinds of problems can be disturbing the individual. After having gained the power of quietude, you then begin to think in terms of solution. You begin to figure out very quietly how to handle something that has kept you awake at night, has worried you, disturbed you, and driven you to drink, perhaps. Find some simple and direct way of approaching the problem. Now, if this approach requires some kind of specialized knowledge, it is far better to get that knowledge than it is to keep on worrying. It may be that counseling is indicated. It may be that a good book on the subject will give you the information that you need. Or perhaps a better adjusted neighbor can help you through the problem. But you have to find out what it is, and you have to realize that it has a solution, and you must stop emotionalizing it, dramatizing it, and gradually becoming hopelessly neurotic over it. Neurosis is probably the most common ailment at the present time, and it is largely due to confused people who do not know what to do next. It is interesting, however, to realize that many of these neurotics are university graduates. They are successful in various fields of activity, but incidents have come along that have wrecked their disposition. And the moment they have lost their orientation, they are on the verge of further catastrophe. The moment we emotionalize problems instead of solving them, these problems increase until they can completely destroy us. So we have to start to work with them quietly, patiently, intelligently. So we'll say, for example, that the individual is having employment problems. One of the reasons why he may be having employment problem is because he has been a very bad handler of his own finances. The problem of keeping out of financial worry is to handle finance intelligently. The moment gratification becomes the sole reason for wealth, you're in trouble. There are proper ways of controlling and directing. There are ways in which the individual will follow Ben Franklin's well-known advice, waste not and want not. Many people today, most people, are wasteful beyond possible conviction. Wasteful may be only in small manners, but necessarily these must be rationalized. If the individual is in financial problem, he should sit down and figure out why. He should not worry because the union can't get him a raise. He should not worry because he needs a job that pays more money. The problem goes right straight back to himself. You should know what he can do. He knows what he can spend. He knows what he must save. An individual in our generation who has no time to save anything, is in trouble. He knows it, but he doesn't want to believe it. Mostly, we have conscience. We have a sense of values locked within ourselves, which will help us considerably if we use it. An individual will say, I shouldn't waste money, and then goes out and wastes it. The appetites are stronger than the resolutions, and that's the problem. But everywhere along the line you come along, there should be clear-cut clinging to facts. The individual should put the integrities first. Instead of trying to humor the spoiled child, the intelligent parent must try in every possible way to give that child a more firm foundation on which to build a life. This, of course, interferes with a lot of things. It interferes with pleasure. It keeps the person at home, trying to take care of his children. These things we do not like to do today. We want complete freedom. And if we follow this concept long enough and continuously enough, we will have the ultimate freedom. We'll have nothing. And therefore, we will have nothing more to worry about, but nothing to do anything with. Actually, therefore, the moment we see a problem, and nearly all people have problems, they come every day with various attitudes. And we find that today a whole cycle of philosophies, religions, and literatures helping individuals to make the same mistakes and to do the things that they definitely shouldn't do. A literature or a doctrine which tells you that you can live badly and by some belief enjoy universal abundance, this such a doctrine is simply false. All the way along now, the problem is to relieve responsibilities and increase opportunities, whether they are deserved or not. We have all kinds of mystical revelations on how to be happy without growing up. And this is not possible and not successful. We want to have all the little fallacies and all the little emotional excesses that we have learned to love. And at the same time, we want to be big, grown up, and wise adults working towards elimination of our problems. This literature is this escapist literature, is gaining tremendous followings and is doing nothing to solve anything. So there again, we are faced with the imperfections which we all share. Now, after we get to the point where we begin to think through things, we also have another question we should always ask ourselves. To what degree are we living up to our own potential? Now, it's not possible to just say we all have the same attitudes, the same abilities, and the same patterns of life. We are each very individual in our attitudes, in our capacities. But each person has a potential. Locked within his own psychic mental complex is a pattern of his own aptitudes, his own abilities, how far he can go with things. And sometimes we have people say, I wish I could understand this, or I wish I could find out more about that. This is exactly what the inner aptitude test is trying to tell us, that whenever we find that something is needed that we do not have, we might as well begin to realize that there are ways within ourselves by which this need can be met. Whatever we know we need, we know enough to solve. And we can accomplish a great deal by simply listening to an occasional statement of our own needs made by ourselves. If we need more abilities, if we need a better training, a better education, if we need a more enlightened religion, we need more exercise, we need a better diet, whatever it is, the inner life will probably tell us something, but it will not provide us with the courage to do what we really know we need. The result is most persons are living below the levels of their own intelligence. They're not doing all that they could do with the capacities that they actually possess, because they're at war with their own capacities. They are inclined to use capacity only for the fulfillment of personal pleasures or personal rewards. Another point that we have to come into contact with is the gradual change in society. What today is best understood in the way of life that we know. We are beginning to realize that the ambitions and the objectives of most people are essentially not right. The individual's objectives are nearly always bound to success in some form. But what kind of success? Success to most persons is affluence of some nature. It is fame, it is distinction, it is wealth. Success is superiority, and we must try to gain it. Well, how is the easiest way to be superior? Well, for the average group of persons, the easiest way to be superior is to gain greater wealth than your neighbor. Wealth becomes the basis of freedom, it becomes the basis of fulfillment, and it becomes the means of gratifying attitudes that are no use in the first place. So the individual looking for success today is striving for monetary success. I understand that sometime last week, I'm not quite sure the exact moment, the 5 billionth human being was born into this world. We now have a population of 5 billion people. And of those, we have 5 billion people who want something or are going to. We have 5 billion people, each of whom, in his own heart of hearts, suspects that he is superior to all the others. Now, this becomes very confusing, but it is part of our natural endowment. These 5 billion people, we are assured that in 10 to 15 years, they will be 6 billion. And so it will go. And even if we don't have any wars and we don't have any nuclear disasters, this is going to continue to go on because of the fact that we are all desirous of succeeding in life. And what is success? Success is the country home, the yacht, the condominium with a private dock. It is the Rolls-Royce car. It is anything you can think of. And everyone is being bled to meet this. I noticed in the paper the other day an announcement of a little snug-away vacation place. I won't get into the details of the matter, but it is just a charming little place where you can get away from all the worries of life, where you can commune with nature and others of similar mind. And it's a very, very moderate place to go to. You can have a room and bath there for $375 a day. And a lot of people will never be happy until they can pay it. If it's only one for one day, it is success. Well, this situation simply cannot go on. And the answer is very definitely that the motive behind life has got to be changed completely. Wealth cannot be the motive if humanity is to survive. It is not wealth in the term of external possessions. It is the wealth in the terms of internal integrities that must be developed, or our extravagances will simply destroy us. So we're learning this the hard way. Now, when we therefore try to learn this and have nothing but regrets that we're not among the privileged, we have to bear in mind that go right straight back, sit down quietly, count 10 with grandmother, and think it through straight and see what you're talking about. Realize that what you are worried over has really little or nothing to do with the essential values of life and growth. There must be and will be a redistribution of our concepts of success. And we can start now. If we have a reasonable way of life, if we have the simple needs of life, if we have a few good friends and a congenial family, or have friends that we can depend on, then this is where ambition should normally end. They should be gradually transformed into aspirations. And aspirations have to do with the individual becoming, and ambitions have to do with his possessing. So we have all these little details, And we look around us, and that's why I think we find that perfection is really in short supply. It is in short supply because, for the first part, we don't recognize it if we had it. The second thing is that we are so busy being imperfect that we really have no time to try for perfection. We really want to do what we're doing. We really just want the problems to be removed so that we can keep on doing just as we please and enjoy all the securities of life. Now, this is possible only under one condition, that we please to do that which is reasonable. The Greeks were well aware of this before congestion moved in. The Egyptians found it and left the monuments in the sand of Egypt for their discoveries. Europe went through one war after another. We had the Inquisition, we had the Crusades, we had the bubonic plague. Everything imaginable has occurred to mankind. And gradually, we are outgrowing the locked-in worldliness that we have suffered from. There's only one way out of this world, and that is to outgrow it. Until we outgrow it, we come right back and sit in it again. The only way we can outgrow it is outgrowing our own mistakes and beginning to strive for those better things which would be the source of internal satisfaction without endangering external securities. We must all be better artists. We must all be better sculptors, better painters, better architects. We must all try to expand and improve the creative talents that we possess in order that we may gradually accomplish the biblical promise that we should be perfect in due time. Apparently, the time isn't quite due because we're not there at the moment. But we are told, be ye perfect. Well, perfection means that the individual is in complete harmony with the reason for his own existence. He is one and completely in sympathy with the great plan of life to which he belongs. He is keeping the rules, and the rules are keeping him. He is filled with the security of integrities, and therefore he is on his way to a genuine perfection. When he gets to the point where he is perfect, he will be like the Tobodaishi's dragon. He will not be any longer struggling and wandering and wondering and fighting. The perfections of things are that the individual, having outgrown this world by solid growth, will proceed to other worlds that are better, but he'll keep right on growing to degrees and qualities we don't even believe to be conceivable. The human being is just something in the making. To us, he's a human being in the making and not doing it too fast. But beyond this, there's a lot more. The human being is a potential universe. Everything that exists in space is there with him. Every growth and conceivable in the vast universal pattern of things will unfold as a great pattern for the unfoldment of human life and all other life that exists in our universe. We are all gradually moving towards perfection. And in that perfection, when we gain it, we will have perfected this kind of life. We will have outgrown the shadows and sorrows of mortal existence. We will have achieved the fullness of the potentials that we possess. And having done this, we will graduate with honors. We will no longer be dropouts. The average today person would like to be a dropout from this troubled world. But there's only one way to get out, be a dropout successfully, and that is to grow above the problem. Never to cast it aside. Never to try to escape realities. The individual who tries to escape a reality simply falls into unreality himself. So in due time, we are going to be pretty good people. But we have a way to go. A lot of people realize this, and they're trying very hard. And the more the world around us becomes difficult, the greater the probability that the world within us will unfold and strengthen us. There is already a considerable group working in the world for the sincere purpose of trying to make this a better place. They belong to all kinds of groups and organizations, or they are separate individuals. But what they really are is individuals who have begun to think through the causes of their own troubles. They are individuals who have awakened to the fact that just drifting along is going to lead only to further confusion and later embodiments with no problem solved. The Oriental thinker, of course, has another dimension to consider. He is concerned with the next time around. Most people in the West don't believe in the next time around. But they might as well, because either that or its equivalent is somewhere waiting for them. But whether it's this next time around or no time around, because of the immediate punishment for misdeeds, which we no longer really take seriously, the problem remains that we have to live with ourselves until we can do it joyously. And when we can live with ourselves so happily and harmoniously that everything involved in the pattern is peace and tranquility, we will have to keep on trying to live with ourselves. So we go out of here, perhaps, with a little achievement, something a little more than we came in with, and we struggle on to another embodiment. And here we come back with all the unfinished business that we tried to avoid or evade in our previous embodiment. So what do? We simply land in a more difficult position than we expect or hoped we would land in. This is simply because we have made no plans for a better re-embodiment. If we really believed it, we'd begin living better right here and now, so that we wouldn't have to face all this difficulty and debility that lies ahead. The selfish individual who dies selfish will be reborn selfish, and it will keep on like that until selfishness dies in him, and every conceivable problem will present him with new opportunities to get over this selfishness. But he may fight on for another 10 embodiments before he takes advantage of the truth of the matter. So everywhere in this problemed world, we have to realize that there's no proof, no satisfactory evidence that getting out of here is going to solve anything. We do not have any reality of the idea that our sins will disappear with our flesh. They didn't begin with the flesh, and they won't end there. Our flesh was perfectly reasonable, perfectly simple flesh, a body to help us to live. Our sins were not in the body, but to the body. We sinned against it. We worked against it. We deprived of it of nourishment and relaxation. We gave it no proper care, and the body went. But the causer of that care is still the same person. And this causer of our care is the thing we have to think of, and it is always ourselves. So if we want to have a little better time, and if we want to have a little better world, we have to realize that this world all more or less comes in together. We've got a certain number of basic entities, and they come in patterns until all have had the same opportunities. Each pattern is a little different. Each challenge is a little different. Each karma has its own individual intensities. But everyone that comes back to learn the lessons they haven't learned yet. And those who have finally learned those lessons may return, but they return as teachers and guides and helpers of other persons. Those who come into this world, and we have great, great respect for them, individuals who have, from birth, sacrificed almost everything for the common good, persons who have gone into the desert and the jungles, into the plague-infested areas, the Father Damians and the Albert Schweitzers, all these kind of people who have dedicated their lives to the service of humanity, they are a little nearer perfection because they have conquered more along the way than we have. It doesn't necessarily follow that they have ever had any easier life than we've had, but they learned more and began to come into the realization of the true purpose for life, which is not this purpose of aggrandizement, this purpose of accumulation, but probably the finest labor of life is service. Service to the needs of those who are still growing. Service to the needs of those who need the instruction by example which we can give. the service that will put persons into responsibilities where they can guide the lesser along the way. In the wisdom cycle of things, those who have learned become the parents who must guide the children who have not yet matured that completely. So all the way along, there is a pattern and a law behind everything. And this law is something that in itself is not cruel. There's nothing unkind about it. It's really all the most kind thing in the world. It is simply a simple fact that we are creatures that depend upon a universal pattern for our own survival. Our breath, our food, our air, the water we drink, the plant, the vegetation that fills this planet. Everything is part of a great lawful scheme. Something that is so tremendous and incredible that we can't even imagine it in its real substance. But all of these things are part of one vast totality. And man is one of the fragments of this totality. He is part of it. If he stays with it and keeps its rules, he has security. If he turns upon it to exploit it and destroy it, he destroys not his locality, but himself. We are assured that the individual who really wants to grow can do so. That nothing can stop growth except the failure of the determination within the person. We are not the victims of the strength of obstacles. We are victims of the weakness in ourselves. And to realize this is to help us to build a more useful and more perfect life in the future. So if perfection is hard to come by, it is still the most desirable thing in the world. And how shall we know it? Well, probably the most perfect answer we have to that is that perfection in ourselves gives us the power, the strength of internal, to enable us to recognize the infinite perfection in all things. The moment we become perfect in ourselves, we behold a perfect universe. And being in a perfect universe, we live accordingly. While we are not perfected in ourselves, we see as through a glass darkly. And with our imperfect vision, behold the tragedies that have resulted from our own mistakes. But that which is perfect, as we must ultimately become, is that in which truth is sovereign. Reality is accepted without question. And each individual is doing that which was his original purpose in existence. Therefore, we are all growing towards a divinity that is not only ruling all things, but a divinity that is ruling us from within ourselves. The more we evolve, the more we unfold our potentials, the more that which is eternal within ourselves achieves victory over the temporal. It is the God in us, the Christ in us, that is the hope of glory. And the release of that power must come through the disciplining of the nature. The mind must be rectified. The emotions must be purified. The body must be made responsive to the needs of the inner life. And the environment in which we live must be beautified to the degree that we can accomplish it, so that all things that are necessary for the fulfillment of the divine plan can be achieved within ourselves. If we take these matters seriously and not painfully, just quietly, it's no more difficult perhaps than it is to learn to play a good game of golf. It may be not any more difficulty than knowing when you have trumped your neighbor's ace in a game of bridge. It makes life not a game exactly, but a tremendous challenge. A challenge which can cause us to release potentials we do not even know that we have. But life is not one disaster out of another. It is the need to clarify in one straight line of thinking by which nearly all disasters are minimized. So if we really want to grow as rapidly as we can and come a little nearer to that eternal rightness which we all hope to attain someday, then the problem is to start now. Count 10 with grandmother and start in thinking through quietly and in straight, rational way every complication of your life, and think how with graciousness, with kindness, with love and forgiveness, you can clarify most of these complications. As this process develops, your health will improve, your friends will be more numerous, your relatives will welcome you, and the great plan of nature will reward you with peace of soul. These are the things which we all work toward. Well, I think that's it, but I got an announcement to make. We have in the library this morning a new exhibit, which we think you will enjoy. Many of you probably have been down in the New Mexican area, where these Indian tribes, the Hopi, Zunis, Navajo, and so forth, have their rituals and their wonderful dolls, the Ketchinas. These godlings have been part of Indian mythology and legendary from very ancient times. Masked dancers are found in the religions of practically all people, and always we find the myths and legends involved in them. This interesting gentleman who we have with us in the library, or at least we have his work, is a Mr. Florian Gabriel. He lived in these areas for years. He is a very gifted artist, and he has created a display of the masked dancers of the Zuni, Hopi, and Navajo peoples. His work is not photographic. His work is dramatic and dynamic, and he has made these mysterious little beings that are like the gnomes and elves of Europe into very real, dramatic, and tremendous artistic creatures. And we have a very nice display of his work in the library. We want to thank him for having brought these to us, and we think you will all enjoy seeing these little masked dancers that represent the spirits that come to the various villages in the mesas of New Mexico and Arizona. We hope you'll take a look. I think you'll find it very interesting. Thank you very much.